You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Matt Meets the Music Industry. I am here with a very dear friend of mine, Ben Voss, of Circular Wave, Music Step, and many other things. How are you today, Ben?
Thank you. I'm very well. Thank you for having me. It's always good talking to you, man.
No, totally. So, did I summarize everything correctly? There's Circular Wave, there's Music Step, and then you're managing some artists now.
Yeah. I started with Music Step when I was working for Sony Music because I thought it's a really great opportunity and a really great idea. And then the Circular Wave label idea came up, which we started in April 25th this year. And then out of a sudden, I discovered an artist on Music Step. His name is Daniel Leon. And I was just so impressed. And then I was meeting him in Hamburg and, spent some days with him, asked him like, what is he doing? What he wants to achieve and stuff. And like, you know, tested his kind of like willingness to be, somebody or to be an artist. And, it went well. And 1 week later, he asked me if I can do his management. And so I was like, maybe I don't have the capacity, but then I was thinking, you know, that's a really good chance because he's a really good artist. So why not? And you know, now I have an artist on the management side as well. So it's all developing.
When you say you test someone for their capacity, what does that mean exactly? I think that a lot of artists come to me and they're like, oh, I'm super willing and yada, yada, yada. But then they fail that sort of test for capacity. Can you elaborate what that means?
Yeah. I would say bring them into situations where they have to succeed, if you want to say so, or where they have to, what's the English word for it? Where they have to just do it, right? So, I mean, yeah. I brought him into a situation where there was a friend of mine opening an art gallery in Hamburg, and I was in Hamburg, and he was in Hamburg. I was like, hey, would you mind playing there for the opening, you know? And then he's like, yeah, sure, why not? And what should I do? Should we meet up front and should we check the set list? Do you want to see me play before and stuff like that? So he came up with the idea how to make it happen. I didn't have to give him the solution. He found the solution himself because he really wanted to do it. So I think it's more like get the people in the situation or the artists in a situation where they have to, where you can see they really want to do it.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it is, you know, cause I also think it's a thing where like, you know, if you're an A&R guy at like a traditional label, you've got 10 to 20 artists that you're involved with at any one time. And I feel like the ones you actually care about are the ones who are like taking initiative.
Yeah.
Because some people just kind of sit around and it's like, well, I'm not going to really go work on that band if they're just sitting around. I want to work on the band who's like not just whining that they don't have a booking agent, but is actively like trying to do things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's so many ways you can do something. I mean, one of our bands on Circular Wave, for example, it's called Chaos Bay. They're from Berlin. They're really, they're still in the UK status, but that doesn't matter once you discover that they want to do something and want to bring up something and want to work on their artist career. So the singer and also simultaneously manager of the band, he wrote to me an email and said, like, look, we can work together, but what I want to have is at least a weekly or, you know, a close exchange to you and your team. So he brought it up, right? So he wanted to be in contact. He wanted to do those calls and those emails, and he wanted to have a fast responding time because he doesn't want to waste any time, and he wants to get the progress going.
Yeah, and I think that's important. But so to circle back, because you alluded to this earlier, but we didn't really unpack it. You worked at Sony at a very high level for a long time.
I mean, I wouldn't say very high level, but I left as a senior A&R for Columbia Records, having several bands on my roster. And
yeah, but those bands were like Amon Amarth.
Yeah, Amon Amarth, Evanescence, Killswitch Engage. That's my biggest three.
How did that come together?
Should I start very early or should I?
Yeah, start very early. Start very early. What happened? Break it down for people.
I started as an intern at Sony Music.
Did you get the internship?
Well, I was studying publicism and communication science, and I discovered the music industry. And then for me, it was the decision right away. I wanted to become an A&R. So I was looking for companies who are, who give interns. And I was studying in Vienna, and in Vienna, the music industry is not that big. So I had to go back to Germany for that. So I found Sony Music in Munich, which is my home area. I got an intern in marketing because it was the only free intern that they had to that point and to that time. And I was like, I don't want to go into marketing. I want to go into A&R. But I mean, to get the foot in the door, I would do it. I was not very, I have to admit that I was not the best marketing intern Sony Music ever had, probably. But I made my contacts, So I was meeting one of my first mentors in the industry, Andreas Kohl, who was A&R there for that time, at the time. And, he said, you have the ability to be an A&R. So I did my intern, and at the end of my intern day or my working day, I was sitting in his office talking about music, talking about bands, like learning.
Yeah.
I did that for half a year. And after that, with the insights I got from Andreas, I did some, let's put it that way. He told me some tricks, which I of course tested right away, and I discovered an artist who became pretty big in Germany. Andreas and I wanted to sign him, but we couldn't manage it because of several things. And then he got signed to Universal, and it was a big hit. So then afterwards they were offering me an assistant A&R assistant job, and that was my beginning, my start. And that was even half working time. It was not a full week, it was a half week working relation then. So I started my own management company for three rock bands, metal bands, one from Spain, one from Munich, and the other one from Austria, just to do something, to get more, to gather more more learnings and stuff. Yeah. And then I did the intern for about, not intern, the assistant job for 9 months. And then I got the opportunity to go to Hamburg to work for a smaller publishing company as an A&R. So, packed my stuff, moved to Hamburg, nobody knowing there, just for the job. And I took the chance, was working for them, for that company, about 1.5 years. And then EMI Publishing in Hamburg, which was the biggest publishing company at the time, before they got sold, they were looking for a young A&R, and with some good network, and I already worked with a major company as an assistant. I had several contacts from my work at AMV Talpa, and I got the job there, luckily. So that was my other three and a half years in Hamburg. The company got sold to Sony ATV. I was spending 1 year more at Sony ATV before I left and went back to Sony because my former mentor, or my mentor, one of my mentors in the music industry, had an opportunity to hire an A&R for rock and metal, when he was running Epic Records.
Yeah.
So I went back to Sony Music, to Munich, and started the rock metal A&R-ing for Epic within Sony Music. My first band I luckily got to work with, not signing them, but you know, being in the team, was In Flames, with their record Siren Charms, that was coming out at Sony. And then, you know, from there on, I got several opportunities and did several signings and worked 6.5 years for that great company.
Awesome.
So what you wanted to, well, that was a really long way to go there, I would say.
So how do you end up working with, because you were, you know, you were the A&R guy when Amon Amarth went number one in Germany.
Yeah.
How did you make that happen?
Well, with a great team and a great vision, I guess. So when I was starting at Epic, 1 year later, Epic got closed down because the head of Epic, Andreas Kohl, you know, changed to RCA. So I went from Epic to Columbia Records, and my boss there, Willy Eman, he wasn't in contact with Brian Slagle from Metal Blade. Mm-hmm. About, like, you know, Amon Amarth, and if there's any possibility to cooperate and to, you know, get involved. So, you know, they really also consulted me, you know, this metal band, you're the metal guy. So then we started negotiating. At one point I flew down to Portugal where Amon Amarth had a small gig, was I think 400 or 500 capacity, just to meet the band, because I never met the band before. And I was always saying, like, look, we cannot do a deal until we didn't meet the band and, you know, we, you know, get to know each other, and they have to see if I'm the right person too, you know. So
yeah,
build the relationship or just check out each other. And so I flew down to Portugal, got to the show, you know, got to know the guys, which was a really, really cool and very, you know, welcoming evening. We talked a bit about what they want to do, how they want to achieve it, what's their vision on the next project. That was Jomsviking at that time. And then I got involved, and I just, I told them what I think. And then we had a discussion about, like, possibilities and how we can make it happen. I flew back. I guess the band liked what I said because they signed the deal. It was through Metal Blade though. Ryan was as far as I know, was happy to do it. I was happy to do it. So we started, and then we set up a campaign that was based on how do we get the band to an attention level where it's not only their old fans, but more like keeping their own fans, but also raising the attention to the whole metal industry, you know?
Yeah.
Includes more than, or more subgenres as well. And I think that was done by finding the right people, or like setting up that good campaign is finding the right people to do it. I mean, we had an absolute fantastic team to work on Amon Amarth. And then we achieved the first number one in their German, I think German number one in their artist career. And a few years later, we went gold with Jomsviking.
Which is pretty crazy.
Absolutely.
For a band who are that heavy, you know, and not ever going to bring in a clean vocal and not ever going to do, you know what I mean? Like that's not a band who fuck around.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I was super happy, and I think also the band was super happy to have that, to achieve it, you know, like having a gold record as a melodic death metal band in Germany is quite a deal.
Yeah.
But I think it was a thing of, you know, good cooperating team, good ideas, no real ego things involved, you know, like, hey, this is the best idea, we go for the best idea, you know? hey, this mm-hmm. this makes sense. We do that. Also, we had some good investment. We had the chance to invest in that band and in that campaign. So it was not only a money thing, but it was a thing about how to spend the money wisely.
Where do you think was the best spending happening? Like what money have the highest leverage?
Well, I think it was fan, how do you put that? Fan events?
Yeah.
Fan events are pretty expensive, but you get a lot of material, you know, you get new videos, you get pictures, fans are happy, and so on. We did we did some good fan events in whole Europe. And
I remember that.
Yeah. and some good press days as well, you know. So bringing everybody together, give them a good time, listen to music, get to know the band, you know, everybody can say hi, the band speaking to everybody, you know, it's, you know, they're getting
yeah. So it was the one-to-one interaction that really moved the needle.
Yeah, it was interacting with the band, you know, being closer to the band than before, for the fans and also some industry people, I guess.
Absolutely. I think that makes a lot of sense, and that's really cool. So you have these successes, and now you've moved on to start your own label, Circular Wave, right?
Yeah.
But even there, you have kind of an unorthodox model. Can you break that down a little bit?
The unorthodox business model or the unorthodox model of our way of working?
Both.
Okay. So, yeah, the unorthodox... Unorthodox is pretty hard for a German. the way we work is basically we work decentralized. So we think that you don't need an office in a certain territory with your own people that are employed by you. But we think if you have a network of, you know, good people in marketing, in promotion, in wherever, whatever you need, who are, you know, passionate about the band and passionate about the project, you know, and really want to work with the project in that territory, you already have somebody who's taking care of that band. So why having, you know, a whole team sitting there when you have the team already, but on a freelance basis?
Yeah.
So that's one thing. It's not a new model. I mean, there's a lot of companies doing it as well, but I think like the network character that we bring in, that we're building up step by step a bigger network where everybody can, you know, can benefit from that big network, because they all are connected too. And the other thing is that we're not going for the old classic royalty share model and you know, but we do profit split deals. So the costs will be split 50-50, the, you know, profit will be split 50-50, or once the band is bringing in more, whatever it is, on videos, more attention, more sales already, we can even split the profit 70-30 or whatever, you know. It's more like we're a team, we work as a team with the band. It's not like we working for the band is not working for us. We're working all together for the success that we want to reach.
Yeah, so it's almost, what I see happening more and more with a variety of labels is you're almost embracing this like management model.
Yeah.
You know, or I feel like, okay, so here's how I view it, and I kind of want your opinion, right? I feel like we had 360 deals and people were like, that's maybe a little bit too much. But also we're like, oh, that's also really fucking convenient. And I feel like managers simultaneously want to have more slices of the pie and also not deal with labels that can be questionable at times. And they want to be able to like control everything on their big piece of product.
Yeah.
So I get the impression that a lot of these companies are just sort of morphing into like this sort of new thing.
Yeah.
That isn't really a label in the proper sense. You know what I mean when I say that.
Absolutely. I think you know the old label business is has to change anyways, because you know this is bands and managements know how it works nowadays. You know, it's not a big secret anymore, especially when now everything is going to digital business. You know, you upload it to the DSPs. It's all digital, digitalized. There's some good physical market going on as well. Yes, of course. And especially in the rock and metal world, and you will always need that, you know, producing vinyls and stuff, but the CD is dying. Nobody's talking about that anymore. At least not the jewel case. You know, maybe you do a good digipack because it has some special things in it, more booklet, whatever. And it's a fan product, and the physical product will become a fan only product, you know, where
it's like
a merchandise item. And I think especially bigger acts and bigger managements, they know that. And you know, why giving a label that much power that much money as well when they can do it themselves now. You know. So I think, you know, I know a few bigger managements who are thinking in that direction. And I think it's absolutely understandable, and there's a few big ones who can really do it. So, and that's why we are also not only to say a record label, but we also offer artist and label services. So once a big act says, okay, well, we want to keep our rights, and we know how to do it, and we set everything up, but we need people, specialists who deal with that, and who can do the work, they can hire us.
Yeah, I think it's a better way to be.
You know, the right solution for the people who are looking for it. So, of course, it's always good to have the old license model or the classic deal model, especially for newcomers, because they cannot afford to have that labor service model. And we need artist development. Because if we don't do it, there's nothing coming up. And so, you know, helping good bands grow is the one side, but also, you know, being a team for bigger acts or for more established acts and or maybe big act, really big acts that need good solutions, that need a good team, that need good ideas, for example, especially, you know. Because I think it's all about the creative ideas, and this is what, you know, what takes time, and you need to have the time to think about, you know, being creative, finding the right ideas, finding the right or the things that haven't been done yet for the band.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there any final things you want to push before we wrap this up?
Not sure, actually. I'm not.
listen to Lonely Spring, motherfuckers. They're great. No, I don't know.
Is there any Q&A? Is there any chat function where we can have?
There is no chat function, but go listen to Lonely Spring, everyone. They rule.
That oh yeah,
I can spend a ton of time on that band.
I can. Yeah, this is like, of course, I can advertise my own band. So go listen to Lonely Spring. It's a great band. It's emo, pop, punk. Go listen to Chaos Bay. It's a great alternative metal band. Go listen to Electric Enemy from the UK. They just released a new song, Save Me, I'm the Crazy, on Friday. Go listen to Peaks. It's a band from Italy.
Out by the time you hear it. It's called Turin. By the time this podcast is out, rather, the song will be out.
Okay.
So that's a good song too.
There's a lot of good music out there, and I'd say go listen to great music and support each other and help each other out, and you know get some fresh air in the industry, in you as a band. If you listen, you're an artist. I just can encourage people to, you know, to just do something if you want to achieve something. That's what we talked about earlier.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Fraites from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.